Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 112 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. I'm Billy, and with me as always is Dave.
Hey, guys.
Today is Tuesday, February 23rd. We're going to be talking about new comics that are coming out on Wednesday, February 24th, as well as some books that we've read recently, including this week's Tuesday Night Book Club pick, Descender, Volume 1, by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. I almost called it December. That was like, it's February. We're reading December. Billy, you once again got the title wrong. So, Dave, how you been this week?
Good, good. You know, just real busy with, you know, getting...
Impending fatherhood.
Yeah, yeah. Fixing up a bathroom, you know. Just
I installed I installed a car seat this weekend, and I had our friend Greg come over, who's a dad of about a 6 month old, and I was like, you have the same car seat, I'm gonna need your help installing this. And he's like, it really is like the easiest thing in the world. And it turned out to really be the easiest thing in the world.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Like, it was good to have him there just to be like, am I doing this right? But I was looking at the instructions, I'm like, it can't be as simple as this looks.
Yeah, you know, for some reason I thought that like the people like you have to get it like professionally installed the first time or something,
right? Yeah.
But you know, I might be wrong with that.
I've just heard so many dads complain about having to install this car seat. I don't know if maybe they got a different model. All I will say is that the Chico Key Fit 30, super easy to install. Highly recommended.
Nice.
Yeah. What car seat did you guys get?
Beats me. It was a whirlwind of a weekend. I remember doing a bunch of like product searches and, you know, like comparing things and, you know, but after all that weekend was said and done, I totally forget what we got. I remember buying like a bunch of bases because like one will go in my car and one will go in Sarah's car and one will go in her parents' car, you know. So I remember like all that stuff was like a lot of research at that time, but then, you know, that stuff, you know, falls out of my head very easily.
I see. And then the other big thing that happened to me this week was I get a call. My wife got a call from our storage facility. It was so cold a week ago, last weekend, President's Day weekend. Their pipes froze on, I think, President's Day, and the place was closed. So our storage unit's on the third floor. Pipe burst on the fifth floor, flooded like everything like in the facility, you know, because it just went down like the elevator shaft and like landed on floors and stuff.
Wow.
Luckily, but here's the crazy part. We moved into the third floor unit like 2 weeks ago. And we were on like the 10th floor. If we'd stayed on the 10th floor, nothing would have happened. So Julie's like, hey, do you want to go check this out? And I just got home from work. I was like, yeah, I'll go check it out. And I get there. And luckily the floor in our storage unit is uneven. Like so the water all kind of like pooled in a puddle, like right by the door. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, we really lucked out here. And it's funny because when we moved in, I was like, uneven floor. I don't know how I feel about this. But man, that uneven floor like saved us, except for one thing. The only things in that like little puddle area, two boxes of my comics.
Oh.
And this is why I will say, bag and board your books, kids, because those plastic bags saved my collection.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Those boxes were totaled. Like the water only got like not even an inch high, but enough to disintegrate like the bottoms of those comic book boxes.
I mean, it's just cardboard, so it's not like, you know.
They stayed together surprisingly well. Like I was able to carry them out of the storage facility in the boxes still, and they did not disintegrate like until I got like home and took the books out. Then like the boxes were just like, we're done, and like died. Because I like had the books bagged, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And there were a few books that were unbagged, but I guess they were held up above the waterline. And one of them was my French version of The Death of Wolverine, La Mort de Wolverine, signed by Charles Soule. And luckily there was no water damage to that, but I spent the weekend like basically reorganizing my comic book collection and putting them in all new boxes and bought more bags and boards because there were some unbagged books there. Luckily they were in like the higher up boxes.
Oh, nice. Nice.
But that was and the messed up part is like 2 weeks ago when we were moving in, I was like, I don't know how I feel about putting my comic books on the bottom. Because what if it floods? And I was like, ah, what's the chance of that happening? And then 2 weeks later it happened. So all I can say is make sure you bag and board your books. If you keep your comics in like your basement, I remember this from like when my uncle's basement flooded during a hurricane, don't put them on the bottom shelf. Like, because his record collection got ruined that way.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's Billy's insurance tips for the week.
There you go.
Now, the big news outside of my storage facility is how much we're finding out about DC Rebirth, which is coming at us in June, right?
Yes, yes.
Is it me or does Dan DiDio record a new video every day and like give it to a different news outlet?
Is this Dan DiDio?
Yeah.
I'm really bad at my Dan DiDio.
I thought that was pretty accurate.
Yeah? I'm trying. It's not where I want it to be.
It might not sound right in your head, but outside, I thought Dan DiDio was like visiting you in South Jersey.
this was kind of surprising. It seems like DC Rebirth is kind of going to bring back some elements of the pre-New 52 continuity mm-hmm. That we've been missing from a video that Jeff Johns did on Comic Book Resources.
Right.
It sounds like they're just saying, like, let's not, you know, when they did the New 52, they said, like, let's bring the DC Universe up to date for a new generation. Yeah. And for this rebirth, it looks like they're saying, let's take what each character does best, or each, you know, like property, like Legion or Justice Society, and let's focus on that. Let's not focus on, you know, the new and the cool, you know, like, so New 52 looked like it was trying to make like new, cool, edgy DC Universe. And then post Convergence,
mm-hmm.
It seemed like they were going for like a very like, oh, this, you know, it's all about you. This is what you asked for. And this is, which almost sounded like baloney of how much they were focusing on it. And they did like Batgirl slash Ms. Marvel slash, you know, Daredevil type takes on all of their characters.
Yeah, they're like, what's working at our company? What's working at Marvel? Okay, now let's copy those books.
Right. And so some of it worked. Like, you know, I love Dr. Fate, and that's definitely a book that feels like it was inspired by Ms. Marvel.
Mm.
In some respects, but it also feels, you know, true. You know, it doesn't feel like, you know, someone's selling you something or like trying to be hip. So I think they had a mixed success there. And what they've always been successful at is letting Jeff Johns do these rebirths. And, you know, there's been two rebirths that, you know, actually got a treatment with that name, which was Green Lantern and Flash, both very successful, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, both of varying quality, like Green Lantern Rebirth, excellent. Flash Rebirth,
it was good. I think it really kind of, it did a lot for Barry Allen. I don't know how much it did for Wally West.
Yeah, totally.
But I think if you look back at like what he's done for characters like Black Adam, like going back to like Black Adam's original look and like kind of, you know, playing with the original origin of Black Adam, you know, the rebirth of Hawkman that he did was also something that, you know, brought that character back to his core. And he used all the elements of Hawkman, but like, you know, put them through Jeff Johns filter to make it, you know, relatable. You know, we wouldn't have the Legends of Tomorrow if it weren't for Jeff Johns' Hawkman mm-hmm. rebirth. I say in quotes because it wasn't a real rebirth. So, like, I think, you know, he's really good at saying like this is what is the best thing about these characters. And so I think that's what they're trying to do with the DC Universe. And it sounds so silly, because That's what they should be doing. That's what that should be the goal every time.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, it's exciting because we might get, you know, some more stories that are closer to what we want as fans.
I'm hoping so. And I think, like, you know, there is a large segment of the old school, like, DC fan base. I don't want to say fanboys because I feel like that is a condescending term in this case. Because it's not people who are just like Marvel zombies or like DC zombies. These are just like a legitimate, like big, sizable portion of the DC fan base that felt left out of the New 52. I'm sure that happened when Crisis happened, you know, and it was like, this isn't my Superman, this isn't my Batman, like darker right. takes on characters in the 1980s. But at the same time, like I know guys who have DC, like Green Lantern tattoos and stuff, and have given up on all DC comics.
Wow, wow.
And, you know, are excited by this rebirth news if it means, like, a return of the Justice Society of America being, you know, World War II heroes. It'll be interesting to see where Rebirth goes. I was thinking there was a third Rebirth series, but that was, I guess, recharged when they brought back Green Lantern Corps, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And that was by Peter Tomasi, if I'm not mistaken.
You are mistaken.
Oh man.
It was by Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons.
Gotcha. And then Peter Tomasi just came in to write the main series, the Green Lantern Corps series later on then.
Right. So like the Recharge miniseries was Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons, and then right. Dave Gibbons wrote the Green Lantern Corps series right. for a good like almost 20 issues, I think. And then Peter Tomasi came on.
Right. Okay, yeah, that's right. Cool. Yeah, I'm excited for Rebirth. I'm not excited that like that Black Canary series ended or that Dr. Fate's coming to an end.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope that, you know, it looks like they're still calling Earth 2 in this new series, in this new universe. But hopefully we get a Dr. Fate in there, or we get, you know, the continuation of this Khalid in this Earth 2 book. And, you know, there's a Batgirl in the Birds of Prey. So hopefully, you know, we see Dinah go over to the Birds of Prey there. So mm-hmm. like, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, measures, you know, like, you know, Grayson ends, Nightwing starts, Starfire is gone, but, you know, Titans are here, you know. Right. So there's logical, like, transitions of where those characters will possibly go to. I would even say probably go to. Mm-hmm. And there's even some exciting things, like there's a new Blue Beetle series coming out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Starring which Blue Beetle?
Judging from, like, some imagery I saw, like... I think it might be both Blue Beetles.
Like Ted Kord and Jaime Reyes?
Yep.
Wow, that's exciting. That's big news. And that's, it's funny because Blue Beetle is one of these like cult favorite characters that never can seem to have a book of longevity, but it's a character that just people love, myself yeah. included, you know? So that's cool. I'm happy to hear that. And we have to get started on our plans to like how the titles we would make for our rebirth.
Right. Because I mean, some seem interesting. Like, there's the Superman,
right?
Which if anybody knows about the origin of Superman, the first concept was called the Superman, with Super and Man being separate. And it was a character who looked quite like Lex Luthor. So I think we might be seeing a Lex Luthor series in the Superman.
Oh, interesting. That makes sense. I was in Target this week, and I saw a 3-pack of action figures for Batman, Dawn of Justice, and it was Batman, Superman, and Lex in his green and purple super suit body armor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. I feel like that... They're bringing Lex to the forefront because he's playing such a major role in Superman, Batman, Dawn of Justice.
Right. And so we also get like a Supergirl series here, a Superwoman series here, and Super Sons.
Is the Superwoman series going to be starring the villainous Superwoman of like of Earth 3?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's a good guess. I was trying to think of who it would be because, you know, in the past, it was, you know, somebody from the future that originally. Then the next iteration that we saw was in the Supergirl series by Sterling Gates and Jamal Eagle. And that was...
Was it Kara's mom?
No, it was Lucy Lane.
Oh, interesting.
So I remember using like Kryptonian technology to fight against the Kryptonians.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember when that was going on. I just wasn't reading the series, and like people were debating who this Superwoman was.
Yeah, and so you know we're also seeing like a lot of like the old pre-Flashpoint, pre-New 52 characters pop up, like the Superman Lois and Clark series. And so I'm wondering about the Super Son series. So it makes me wonder, like, you know, now they have an actual son, right?
Right.
And there was also the guy who took up the name Mon-El, but he was a kid for a while. Jonathan Kent, who was General Zod's son. In Jeff Johns' story.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Jonathan Kent, yeah. Yes. And he ended up... he becomes Flame Bird, I'm sorry. He becomes Flame Bird or Nightwing. Anyway, Jonathan Kent, he was a kid that they were raising at a time. And there's also Superboy around. So it would be kind of interesting if like the three of them were like the Super Sons.
Totally.
There's a lot of like, it's very Superman and Batman heavy.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise to nobody.
Yeah. But you know, there's some really cool things in here. I'm looking forward to most of this stuff. And I guess we'll see from here on out, but I think next week we should do our rebirth. And I know we said that like a couple weeks ago, but let's do the our Superman line next week.
Okay. So how many books do we have to come up with?
Well, I say that like you and I, we could like choose whatever. Like your Superman line could be as big or as little as you want it.
Gotcha.
But like in the end, we're going to come up with 52 books.
Gotcha. I have to start strategizing this out.
Yeah. I started a little bit. And so I think I've got an idea.
Oh, cool.
So...
Yeah, this will be fun. And then people at home can home game it too and, you know, come up with your own, your 52 titles that you would for DC Rebirth. And if you want to post that on the Facebook page or on the comments at TuesdayNightMovies.com, feel free to. As it is now, like, I end up running alongside people who listen to the podcast. So if you just want to tell me about the 52 titles you'd come up with while for a run, that'd be cool too.
Long run.
Yeah. You know, we run a lot of hills. you're slower up there. So, Rebirth. Excited for it. And it's funny because, like, every year Marvel seems to do, like, an all-new Marvel Now. And they seem to have gotten the handle on, like, reinvigorating characters this way. You know, just, like, launching a bunch of books, seeing what works. DC, I just feel like the New 52 was successful and then it stopped being successful for the most part. And I don't know. They just seem to be not like treading water. Doesn't seem like flailing in the water.
You know what I think it is that like every time they launch a bunch of new books, it seems like it is centered around an event that is playing with continuity.
Right.
Outside of Secret Wars, that's not the case for Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't think DC did this right out of the gate. You know, like, they, well, I mean, right out the gate they did it. But then, like, the next round of titles was like, you know, Earth 2, Batman Incorporated, and a couple other titles, which were like, you know, and then whatever like hung around, what didn't, but you know, obviously Earth 2 is still here, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. So why don't we, now that's coming out in June, so why don't we talk about what we're going to be picking up, not in June, but this week, and we'll talk about our 20.
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to give a little spoiler alert. I might have gotten a dollar. Yeah. So the first book for me, Justice League number 48. If you listen to this podcast on a regular basis, you know that Dave and I are completely hooked on the Dark Side War. We bought every one of those great to middling one-shots that came out in between Justice League issues, but now we're back into the crux of it.
Yes. And again, if anybody wants to know the best ones, it's Batman and Green Lantern. You could.
Yeah. And yeah, in my opinion, Batman is head and shoulders above everything. Green Lantern was decent. Everything else is a waste of money.
Yeah.
Like, not buy it outside of like a quarter bin or a 99-cent sale. That's the one shots. The main story in Justice League, though, has been fantastic. We got Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok together. And from what Geoff Johns has said in that CBR interview, this is the team that's going to be the team through the end of Geoff Johns' run, which is only two issues after this. Like, I thought they were going to go to 52 issues, but it sounds like it's issue 50 where they're ending.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he said that in an interview with CBR. Hmm. So I don't know. Well, I guess everything actually is being renumbered in June. So.
Oh, yeah, except for, including Detective and Action, but they're going back to their old numbering.
Yeah, and they're doing that Marvel trick, or also a DC trick, because DC did this with Superboy and Adventure Comics, where they count the renumbered issues as like part of the series to keep it all one volume. So, you know, the Detective Comics numbers will be jumping 52 issues in numbering. Like, we're not going to get, since we sort of had a Detective Comics 900 during the new 52, that month with the Gatefold covers, and the story was like, who are the 900? There's not going to be another Detective Comics 900. Like, we're starting at like nine something. Yeah. But yeah, so, and I'm excited for that. I'm a fan of legacy numbering, but at the same time, I'm not a fan of constant renumbering of books. And going back to legacy numbering kind of makes things hard to follow too. Like, when I was reading Hickman's Fantastic Four and Marvel Unlimited, I was like, all right, like, at what point does this go to, you know, it shifts over to like a new numbering and then it doesn't. And it's just annoying.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, I kind of, you know, there used to be those triangle numbers on Superman series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the '90s. And that was helpful to know, like, which came where in like the storyline.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if, you know, like, there was a kind of like, you know, because all of these comics now are written with the trade in mind, somewhat at least, you know. So it would be nice if there was, you know, like a, you know, you have like the, you know, Detectives number, you know, nine, whatever. But at the same time, you know, you can also have the series have like a number somewhere, like, you know, it says like, you know, Judas contract number two, you know, on it. And I know they do that sometimes in like the story titles on the cover, but like, maybe there's like a way to make that more uniform across the titles, so you know like where they are in the storyline. And you know, if you pick up number one of that, you would get like an introductory story also to who the characters are.
Right.
It's, you know, funny, you're jumping on point.
We got into this renumbering rabbit hole. I was like, weren't we going to do the 20? And I was like, oh, wait, we already started the 20. So yeah, Justice League number 48 is the first book on my stack. That'll be the first book I read this week. Then another regular series that I like to pick up every month is Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 11. written by Tom Scioli and John Barber, art by Tom Scioli. John Barber, is kind of like more like a story consultant, like dialogue consultant than anything else. Like, this really is like Tom Scioli's baby. This book has just been amazing. If you were a fan of G.I. Joe and Transformers growing up the way I was, like if you're a kid of the 80s, you owe it to yourself to buy this book. It is unlike anything on the stands right now. And then for my next three picks, I'm going a little out there and then I'm going really out there. Like we are leaving. This is probably the first week and I don't know how long that no Marvel books are making my 20.
Wow.
But instead I'm going down to Valiant Comics and we've got two issues of Bloodshot Reborn this week. The current storyline is the Analog Man. Bloodshot gets sent to the future, and I'm not really sure what happens because I haven't read part one. But part two comes out this week in Bloodshot Reborn number 11 by Jeff Lemire and Louis LaRosa. The reason I'm excited for part two is that they are re-releasing part one, which was Bloodshot number 10, but they're releasing it as Bloodshot Reborn, the Analog Man number 1 director's cut. Again, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Louis LaRosa. It's going to include pages of LaRosa's pencils before they're inked and colored. It's also going to have Jeff Lemire's script for the issue. I've never read a Jeff Lemire script before, so that's... Oh, no, that's not true. I did read one for that Vertigo series. The Kid with the Horns.
Sweet Tooth?
Sweet Tooth, yes. I almost said Strangelove. I'm like, that's not right. That's something with an S. So anyway, I'm going to pick up two issues of this. I actually ended up meeting a marketing guy from Valiant recently at a group workout. And I was saying, he was like, oh, do you read Valiant? Because I was saying how I read comic books. And I was like, you know, I really don't. I was like a big fan of Valiant in the 90s. I didn't know where to enter like with the new universe, the new Valiant universe, because it's been around for a few years now. And like, you know, I didn't want to have to like read everything. It seems very interconnected. But we were talking about Jeff Lemire writing Bloodshot Reborn. He's like, it's a really good series. You should check it out. So I'm gonna jump in for two issues this week. And Valiant is making that easy to do with Bloodshot Reborn Director's Cut for $5 and Bloodshot Reborn number 11 for $4. And then finally, jumping down to like the indie section, not even looking at any big name companies for this book, called Imposter number 1 by two people I've never heard from, Jason Patrick and Martin Szymanski. The publisher is 21 Pulp. If you're looking for it at your local comic book store, I'm guessing that if they did order it, they probably only have a couple of copies. So if you want it, make sure to go early or call them up. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a really cool premise. It's basically they find out that like all the superheroes in town were just one guy who's been like running around in different outfits. and it sounds interesting because I don't think it's played for laughs. So like, I want to see what they're doing with this and if they'd live up to that cool sounding a solicit.
Yeah. So it's not played for laughs?
I don't think so. Yeah. But I'm not sure. So I guess we'll find out when I pick the book up. And that's, so that brings me to $21. I rarely go over 20. If I took out $1, I would have to drop both Bloodshot Reborn issues because that's what threw me over the top was one of them being $5. Right. I really wanted to give a shout out to that book because I feel like it's about like you love Jeff Lemire, but you've never read the Bloodshot title, right?
No, you know, I mean, they had Dwayne Swarzynski on Bloodshot too, and yeah. I really like Dwayne Swarzynski's writing of Iron Fist, and I liked him on Birds of Prey. So, like, you know, but like you said, like it felt like very interconnected, and I'm like, I don't even know where to start. Sure. So, yeah, you know, I'm gonna listen to what you say about Bloodshot next week, and maybe I'll pick up some of Lemire's books over there if they're traded.
Yeah, they are traded. Because I noticed on Comixology this past week, Valiant was having a big sale on there.
Oh, okay.
But what was I going to say? Lemire is exclusive to Marvel now, but you know, Descender and this Bloodshot series are like the two series he's allowed to write, I think, like outside of Marvel Comics.
Oh.
So I feel like that just says a lot about the quality of the book right there, that he is willing to like say, all right, I'll be exclusive to Marvel, but I want to be able to do this series.
Right. Yeah, no, that you're right. You're right about that.
Like, I feel like that means he's got like a drive for this character.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are you picking up this week?
Like you, I'm picking up Justice League number 48.
It really is a must buy. Like, especially now that like we were excited about Darkseid War before we knew about Rebirth.
Right. And you know, in the solicit, they're talking about Superwoman's newborn child.
Yeah.
And the secret behind it, which makes me think you're right about that Superwoman series being about the crime syndicate Superwoman. Next up is Aquaman number 49, and Dan Abnett is taking over this series, and he's wrapping up the aftermath of the Thule invasion. And I think he might just be on this series until Rebirth, because, you know, there's a bunch of talk about Geoff Johns coming back to Aquaman.
Right, with Ivan Reis coming back with him too, right?
Yeah, and since he's leaving Justice League, that would make sense, because it seems like he's only writing like one DC book a month now.
Yeah, you know, he used to be like the Brian Michael Bendis of DC, but he's worked so much on the TV show and cinema end now that I don't think he has the time for it.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm going to jump down quickly to some of my reviews. I read Earth 2 Society numbers 8 and 9 this week, and that was written by Dan Abnett. Dan Abnett also wrote the Convergence JSA tie-in.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh. He gets the JSA.
Well, and if you're, you speak of Dan Abnett's writing, if you're a fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, that iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy was basically co-created by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't have that Guardians of the Galaxy movie if it wasn't for the two of them.
Right. You know, I got excited that there was a new writer on, and, you know, I was like, oh, he really got the JSA with that Convergence tie-in. So, you know, I picked up both of the new issues at full price just because, you know, I was excited to read what he was writing there and very hopeful. And he did not let me down. I haven't liked Earth 2 this much since James Robinson was on the title.
Wow, that's high praise.
Yeah, and you know what he did that was great is that the first like two scenes did not focus on like Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman. He focused on JSA characters, and you know that Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are running around that Earth or iterations of those characters. You know, I'm fine with that, but you know it seems like he might get the idea behind Earth too. I think, you know, when Tom Taylor took over, a lot of my complaints were like, you know, this is just a parallel universe story. Like, what yeah. makes an Earth 2 story is that, you know, it's based on Golden Age material, and it's obviously not happening here. And so he's really, you know, focusing on classic Justice Society characters, but not taking out the Dick Grayson Batman that's in here, or you know, Power Girl, or the Superman that was found. So like Val Zod. So all of that, you know, really, really good stuff in there. I would even, you know, suggest people pick it up. And I hope when Earth 2 is rebooted with this, or rebirthed, that he stays on it. But back to the 20, I'm excited to read his Aquaman too.
Oh, nice.
So, because I haven't read much of his stuff, to be honest. And so all this JSA stuff that I've read from him recently that I've really liked, I'm excited for Aquaman. You know, as much as people were not really happy with this recent run on Aquaman of Cullen Bunn, yeah, you know, I enjoyed it, and I think like this has been like a really, really solid run on Aquaman, you know, right from number one to, you know, where it's going to end at 52. So I think that Dan Abnett being on this is going to probably end it out really, really solid.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, Geoff Johns's run got a lot of play for like making Aquaman cool again, but it has been a solid series the entire run of the New 52.
Yeah, Jeff Parker's run was great. You know, I loved Cullen Bunn's run, and you know, I think a lot of people had that reaction to his costume and that, you know, he changed stuff up. And you know, there's a lot of times when, you know, comic creators change up stuff with characters and people are like, they change what's great about it. But like, you know, if you go along with the story, you realize that, there's a reason for it, or there's a twist to it. And, you know, and it looks like he is leaving Aquaman the way he found him, but maybe with a little bit more layers. And so that's what a good writer does.
Yeah, totally.
After that, I'm going to pick up Cyborg because I'm really digging Cyborg. On the cover, there's a guy who looks like Rip Hunter, the 90s version, who looks like Cable, which I think is neither Cable nor Rip Hunter.
Oh, that 90s version of Rip Hunter. Like, the character will never live that down.
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, I've been really enjoying this book, so I'm picking it up. Justice League 3001, a book that's getting the axe, I think, for this rebirth. It was not in the titles that were getting a rebirth treatment. Mm-hmm. Part of me just hopes that it just maintains outside of continuity, because it's not really like part of the DC continuity. It's just kind of sitting off by itself. So, but number nine is looking a lot of fun. Scott Collins is a regular artist on here. I think his character acting is great, and I think it has even improved the series. And Eclipso showing up. So they're having a lot of fun in the series.
Oh, nice. And I've always liked Eclipso ever since Eclipso, The Darkness Within.
Oh yeah, I love those annuals. I'm sure like many people did not, because it seems like, you know, like it was like one step away from Bloodlines.
That's amazing. Like, I was super excited for The Darkness. Like, I shouldn't say I was super excited for Eclipse of the Darkness Within until I read Eclipse of the Darkness Within number one, which started out like that whole series. I remember it being drawn by Bart Sears, and it was, I loved it so much.
I ended up on the cover.
Yeah, it had that gem on the cover, which I thought was cheesy, like just like a little cover gimmick. But then when I read the book, man, I like went out of my way to read as many of those as possible, and then even read like the Eclipso series that followed after that.
Oh, and what followed after that was not a great series.
I actually loved it. I was a big fan of the Bloodbath. Like, I was, which. Yeah, at the time, though, I was a fan of the Yolanda Wildcat, and I was sad to see her get killed.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed
like,
that series.
Creeper, Yolanda Wildcat, Peacemaker.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. They killed off a lot of, like, C and D level characters in, like, those few, and I think that one issue.
Yeah, they did a Times Past with that in that series, too, I remember, like, before James Robinson was doing Times Past stories.
Oh, interesting. I don't remember that. That's cool.
I mean, I didn't care for the series too much, but like there was a lot of things that happened in that series that, you know, played out in other series. So I went back and like would pick it up in quarter bins and stuff just to read it, because, you know, I didn't think it was like the greatest book, but it was like, it's like oddly holds a firm place in the DC continuity pre-Flashpoint.
Oh, totally. Like, you know, what's her name? Jean Loring ended up becoming Eclipso, and her Eclipso was definitely like related to the darkness within Eclipso.
Yeah, yeah. And all those annuals are fun.
Yeah, those, to me, those are up there with like Armageddon 2001, and like Bloodlines is kind of in the same as, I think Marvel might have even been that same year that Marvel and their annuals, every annual introduced a new character.
Oh,
like,
really?
Every one of those was like a lot of lame characters got introduced. I think the only one that had any popularity was the Executioner, a new X-Men villain that ended up getting his own action figure at one point.
Well, I still stand by those Bloodlines animals. I mean, some of them weren't great, but there were great ones. I'm looking at you, Purple Blanca.
Purple Blanca, never forget. Purple Blanca forever.
And lastly, I'm going with Superman, Lois and Clark, number five. I really think this is going to play into Rebirth, you know, especially now that they're going back to old numbering and that Super Sons thing. I think this series is going to be something that people are going to be going back to and picking up, which leaves me at $18. So I have $2 extra, so you could borrow $1 from me to get that $21 in there,
Billy. Sweet. I appreciate that a lot. I was like, I really hope Dave doesn't hit $20 this week. What was I going to say? Oh, speaking of, you know, titles that might be playing into Rebirth, I did thumb through the latest issue of Telos that came out last week.
Yeah.
Because Parallax was in it. When I was in Midtown Comics, buying three comic book boxes and bags and boards. I thumbed through that issue just because I wanted to see where it went. And it's interesting. Like, Parallax, like, tricks Telos into basically, like, giving him his own Coast City. Superman, Lois, and Clark, Parallax finds himself post-convergence in the New 52 and, like, watches from afar. I'm wondering how many pre-Flashpoint characters are just, like, you know, they've decided, oh, we're just going to sit on the sidelines from now on.
Right. And I wonder, you know, if pre-Flashpoint, you know, because that was pre-Zero Hour Parallax, right?
Mm.
So, and then, you know, post, you know, the so is pre-Zero Hour Parallax, is that still like pre-retcon, you know, like is he just really crazy, or is he like does he have the Parallax alien parasite in him?
Yeah, that's a good question, because now do we have two Parallax aliens in wandering around the DC universe,
or is that like old continuity where, you know, Parallax, it's just Hal Jordan going crazy,
right? I can't say.
Well, I know, but it's a good question to ponder.
Yeah, it's one of those questions I think is going to make, like, I say I can't say because if I think about it too hard, my brain is going to explode.
Yeah, yeah. So did you finish Descender this week?
I did. Did you?
I did.
Yeah, it was nice that, you know, like, nice six-issue volume. And I loved it so much, I wanted to go right into volume two.
Oh, did they release volume two yet?
I believe so.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, let me double check Comixology while we're talking.
I know they've been, like, you know, putting out like more issues, but right. I don't know if they made it to enough to make a second volume. But the art is just so gorgeous, you know.
Oh, totally.
And this was one of those books that Sarah's like, "What are you doing, just staring at pages for so long?" Like, she'll always ask. Like, she's like, "I don't know how you finish comics, because like, I'll always look over at your iPad and you're just staring at the same page for like 5 minutes." And sometimes, right, like, you know, that'll happen when I really enjoy the art and I'm just going over the panels again after I've read them, and, you know, just looking at the detail that the artist put into it, and, you know, his watercolor washes and are delicate at times. And, you know, I really like when he gets a little heavy with them too. I think he's a great storyteller, and, you know, as far as like a story written about a child, you know, he really is an artist who can draw a kid and make him look like a kid, you know?
Yeah, Dustin Nguyen's art is perfect for this series. Did you have a favorite issue?
I don't know. I think I really, you know, the first issue I enjoyed because it was like a very, like, made me question what was going on. But I think I really enjoyed when they all were on the ship together, like that part of the series where I was like, yeah, they could all become a team, you know, right. Like, I was kind of getting into it, and, you know, that's not the way they're taking it. And in some ways it reminds me of Sweet Tooth because of that, you know, like a kid who is, you know, destined for greatness, and we don't know why. And he's around a bunch of grown-ups that shouldn't be trusted.
Yeah, I had that same feeling. I was like, oh, they're going to be a team and like explore space together. And then, you know, the shit hit the fan.
Yeah.
My favorite issue was definitely the second issue, which alternated page for page in the present and in the past, where Tim's memories are being uploaded. So you get to see like his origin, and you see him basically getting taken in by this family. He's a companion robot, but he's getting taken in by this family as like an adopted child almost.
Mm-hmm.
And grows up as like this kid's brother, and you know, calls like the mom, and I love that issue. And then it's funny, the other issue that I loved was number 6, which was all in the past, and we get Dr. Kwan's origin, and find out like his dark secret.
Oh yeah, I really like that too. And you know, I think it really plays into this idea of what this hive mind is.
Yeah, and Lemire is great at giving us exposition without it seeming like exposition. Like, nothing seemed expository. It just felt like part of the story. Well, yeah. Number 2 and number 6 were all exposition. I'm reading it. I'm like, this is wonderful. Like, it's paced beautifully. I could see this being a movie, you know? And I do mean that as a compliment. Though the way that it's paced is definitely like, this was not an abandoned screenplay. Because it's paced with like a cliffhanger at the end of every issue.
Yeah, and you know, you can't. It's definitely not written like a movie, you know. Especially like you're talking about all that exposition in those two issues. That you know, but yeah, you're right that this would make a great movie, a great sci-fi movie, you know.
Yeah, and then I really love the series, and I was wrong. Volume 2 is not out yet. I saw it on Amazon, but it's available for pre-order. It's not coming out until May.
Oh, okay.
They're only up to issue number 10 right now.
All right.
Like you said about Lemire's independent stuff before, I think I'm going to wait for the second volume instead of diving into the single issues.
Yeah, I like that too, just to like, you know, then when I buy the second volume, I usually go back, read the first, and then, you know,
Although the way number 6 ended, like it really goes right into number 7, and I'm like, I want to know what happens next. I want to know right now.
Yeah. And I like that Telsa is kind of softening to Tim a little bit.
Yeah. And I like that Dr. Kwan kept calling her Tesla, because I kept reading it as Tesla too.
I know. I mean, I was like, that is like a nice way to like help you remember her name too.
Yeah,
totally. And I like that that Digger bot.
Yeah, the driller.
Driller, yes. Yeah. Driller is a killer, right?
Yeah, driller is a killer. Hates the humans.
Yeah. And where we leave them, like battling for their lives, kind of like on a Mongols war world, was very cool.
Yeah, and that where they're battling for their lives. You know, with the melting pit, I wonder if Jeff Lemire was a Transformers fan growing up, because it reminded me of the smelting pit from the original Marvel Transformers series. There's an issue where, you know, we find out, like, because Transformers at the time had only taken place on Earth, and like we knew about the robots on Earth and stuff, but they went back to Cybertron to find out like what was going on there. And and they gave us this great issue. It's like one of my favorite, I think it's just one of my favorite comics from my childhood. And I read it in a trade recently. It still holds up pretty well. So it's basically about Blaster and who's like the good guy version of Soundwave. But there's this smelting pit where all the Transformers go to like get recycled, and he's trying to like avoid dying in there. And that was like a Bud Budiansky creation. I'm trying to think where it first premiered. I think it was, it's in one of the first, like, it was in issue number 17 of the Marvel series, which you can find in, like, Transformers Classics, probably, like, Volume 2 or Volume 3 by IDW. Yeah, a very cool take on, like the Transformers concept that you weren't getting from the cartoon show or the comic books at the time.
Yeah.
Like it had like a very bleak outlook, which it like wasn't what the series was about before that.
Well, that's
Anyway,
cool.
a little tangential on my point. yeah, so that's that. But yeah, Descender is great. I highly, if you are a fan of sci-fi, I totally recommend it.
Yeah, totally.
Like one of the best Image comics out there right now. And I'm guessing like one of the most underrated. You don't hear much about Descender.
No, not at all. Yeah, but I definitely like that. I definitely like that, and I'm definitely gonna pick up volume two. Maybe in May we'll have
a follow up
to this book club reading.
And what else did you read this week?
Do you want to talk about book club for next week?
Oh yeah, we are going to be doing Vixen: Return of the Lion by G. Willow Wilson, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, G. Willow Wilson, creator of the Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel.
Yes, and Vixen's going to be jumping from the CW Seed cartoon to live action this week in Arrow. So it's gonna be a Vixen episode next week.
Yeah. So here's your homework, listeners, for this week. Watch Arrow to see, is she coming this next week's episode, right?
No, this week.
This week. Okay. So watch Arrow this week. See Vixen's premiere in live action, and then also read Vixen: Return of the Lion by G. Willow Wilson.
Watch the CW Seed series. It'll probably take you a half hour.
If that. Yeah. I think it's like 18 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, we'll come back and chat about it.
Yeah, all things Vixen next week.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sounds scandalous.
A little bit. Yeah. So what else did you read this week?
I read... Squadron Supreme #4.
I missed out on that. And it's funny, I was going to read it today before we recorded, and I just didn't have a chance to.
Well, I'm just going to say that there is a crazy twist and a reveal for one of the characters in here in the first couple pages that's just going to like kind of blow your mind a little bit.
Interesting. Something tells me I'm going to end up reading this like right after we finish recording.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much more, but it was a great issue. It was fun to be in Weird World. It kind of reminds me of Marvel's Scarterus, where the Warlord takes place in a DC universe. There's even a character who shows up at the end who is like an ex-military guy. And so, but I enjoy this trip here, but I also want to get back to what's going on in the Marvel universe and them killing me more like ASAP.
Yeah.
So that was great. That was by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk. I also read Extraordinary X-Men #7 by Jeff Lemire and Victor Ibanez. And Nightcrawler is back in his like right mental state. When we first see him in the series, he's kind of like talking like crazy religious, like not making sense, but like, you know, almost sounds like he's like quoting scripture, but not really. And Storm and Jean Grey go into his head to find out what has triggered this. And we see that he's, you know, witnessed like horrible mutant Holocaust in Germany, which he was protecting, which kind of like had him like revert, hide into his mind kind of thing. But they brought him back out. And Nightcrawler's back, so that's cool. Exciting.
He's always been one of my favorite X-Men.
Yeah, yeah. I know you were reading that series for a while.
Yeah.
Chris Claremont and...
Todd Knock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was a really good read. And they were also leaving Weird World. I think Marvel's really promoting Weird World right now. I also read Dr. Fate #9 by Paul Levitz and Sonny Liu. And this Dr. Fate kind of like, it was like, it kind of felt a little, it was, so there was in the series or in the book, there's this protest going on down by the UN in Manhattan about Egypt. And the police are getting involved and it's getting like really tense, like, you know, that like, bad things could happen. So Dr. Fate intervenes, Khalid, and he, you know, kind of pulls the police away, you know, pulls, you know, some other, you know, of the protesters away, because it was, you know, there was going to start violence. And so, like, it was very like, it kind of like felt like it was like slightly touching on political issues, especially with like police violence in, you know, all the news stories that were are going around now. But it kind of seemed a little nervous to do it, so like only it kind of lightly touched on it. But you know, he didn't really interact with anybody, but he did it from afar and kept the peace in some way. So it was kind of interesting, but kind of seemed a little scared to make a statement.
Gotcha.
But it was good. It was interesting. And on top of that, it had a very Spider-Man vibe. Like, you know, he's focusing on Dr. Fate, and Khalid's personal life is not going too well, and academic life. So that was kind of nice. Like I said about Earth 2, really great. Now that Dan Abnett's on, I read Superman American Alien number 2 by Max Landis, and I enjoyed this much more than the first issue.
Interesting.
You know, it seemed much more like a Superman story.
Gotcha.
Except, you know, he, you know, has Clark make a mistake that's much more than you would ever see in a Superman comic, you know, when he's dealing with like his powers.
Right.
And losing control of them. And so that's like kind of interesting. And, you know, it's just a different take on it. So it was pretty nice. It wasn't different in that, like, I would say it's just a more extreme take on it. But it was a nice Superman story. I also,
now, do you think you enjoyed this more because it felt more like a Superman story, and not that you were like in a different frame of mind than say when you like read the first issue?
No, because he recently said like some jerk things about Star Wars, and you know, like he's always in the news about saying like awful things.
He's on my crap list now.
Yeah, he said Rey, like he didn't like Star Wars because Rey was a what do you call that?
Oh, Mary Sue.
A Mary Sue.
Yeah, I did see him say that. Yeah, that guy has a big mouth.
Yeah, and I think Mark Waid said, well, you know, you're writing Superman. He was a big Mary Sue. You know, like a lot of, you know, a lot of great characters start out as Mary Sues, and you know, and someone pointed out that like Luke is anything but, you know, Luke is totally a Mary Sue. You know, like Luke is Lucas. You know, like you know, it's spelled out in the name, Luke S. You know what? Like if you break that down, it's like Luke S. What does S stand for? Skywalker.
That's a good point.
Like, you know, and he's like one of those characters who's just like, you know, like oddly amazing at everything. And so, you know, he still seems like a jerk. And, you know, as I was reading it, I was like, this guy's a jerk. but like, you know, some of it seemed interesting, and, you know, like, it's very comparable to Mark Miller's stuff in that, like, it's an updating that makes it a little more edgy, and sometimes it just feels for edgy's sake,
right?
So, you know, but I felt like he wrote Martha Kent a little better in this issue than, you know, the Kents were portrayed in the first issue, really caring about what, you know, their child was doing and stuff like that.
Totally.
I also picked up Kronos number 1, which was an old issue from like 1998 by John Francis Moore. And this is it
the Kronos that like takes over for like the villain and like becomes like a time traveler? I love that series.
I never read it, but I always wanted to. But this is what I'd want to see from like a Rip Hunter series.
I was the person buying that book on the stands.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, it holds up.
Nice.
And I finished Batman Court of Owls, Volume 1. And by Scott Snyder. And
oh, Greg, you read the whole thing. Nice.
Yeah. So it was, I started it last week, and I think I was saying that, you know, Gates of Gotham definitely adds something to it. And Greg Capullo's camera angles are amazing. I can't stand how Greg Capullo draws cigarettes, though.
That's just cigarettes.
It just flattens out when it gets to someone's mouth. Like,
gotcha.
It makes it look like two dimensional, and everything else is in like a three dimensional space.
Sarah's like, "Why are you staring at that page?" And you're just like, "Cigarettes."
Yeah.
Cigarettes. Now, how did you love issue number 5, which was the one that like you had to spin the book around to like read it?
I thought that was amazing. I thought that was really, really cool. Like it made, like it helped make it feel trippy. Like Batman was on drugs and you felt like,
yeah,
you were disoriented too.
I remember when that issue came out, that immediately became one of my favorite issues of that year.
Yeah, it was a really neat, like it was a neat trick to pull. And I think it, you know, added to the story a lot.
Yeah. Did you have to, like, I guess you had to like lock your screen on your iPad, because I read it in print, so it's easy enough to like spin the book around.
Well, you could leave it on the table and then spin it around. You know?
Okay. Gotcha. I picture you walking around your table. Like, Sarah's like, "What are you doing now?" And you're just like spinning around, like as this book rests on like, you know, like a coffee table. I'm trying to read.
So yeah, that was about it. What else did you read this week?
I read Descender, and that was it. I cherry picked a couple of things that were in those comic book boxes. So I found myself thumbing through an official handbook of the Marvel Universe from like the 1980s, and I was so obsessed with those. They were to me a bargain when I was a kid, because they were like $1.75 and they were 48 pages. And it was all text, you know, with like a couple of images of the characters. Mm-hmm. And you could just like that was great for like a long car trip to read about these characters that I'd never heard of before. And then like Big Heroes 2. So I was just like thumbing through a few entries in there, and then also just like thumbing through some other books, but nothing really of note. Yeah. Huh. I read a couple of comics that made me decide like I didn't need to own these. I don't want to name them. It's funny, like, oh, I was like, oh, these have been in storage, and then I read them and I was like, oh, they're not worth anything. I'm basically paying to store them, so I might as well cut my losses now on them.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, and that was always like a weird thing to do. I'm like, I'm throwing a comic book away. This doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I know. When my parents came in this weekend, they, you know, we're like, it's time to get your books out of our house.
Wow.
And so I was like, all right. So well, I was like, you know, because I was like, you know, once I finish, you know, creating some shelves and stuff, I'll get to it. And so
they're like unloading the trunk.
Yeah. So, you know, next time we head to my parents, I think I'll grab a couple boxes and sort through them, you know, little bit by little bit. I don't know. They might just be like, take it all now. So whatever fits in your car, bring it. So they did that last time with the action figures. So
gotcha.
I went through like what action figures were like salvageable, what like I wanted to keep around, you know, like I kept all my like superpower stuff, right, for sentimental value. And then like some of the superpower stuff was just beat to crap that like, you know, nobody could use it again. You couldn't sell it, you know, like they were just used so much that like
they were played with lovingly.
Right. So, you know, I got rid of some of those stuff, like, because, you know, nobody would want them.
Gotcha.
You know, and there's no use just like keeping them around for no reason, you know. And then like I kept a bunch of stuff that like, you know, if my kid ever gets into superheroes, that he would probably enjoy playing with.
Cool.
So I'm sure I'll be doing the same thing with books, but you know, it also makes it a little nicer that like I can probably find them on Comixology too. So
yeah, when I was dealing with this flood, I said to Julie, I was like, you know what never gets damaged by water? Digital comics. Like, yeah, your iPad might get ruined, but your collection is still intact.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So, yeah.
All right. So I guess that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you're a Descender, if you read Descender this week, thanks for participating in the book club. And make sure you read Vixen, Return of the Lion by G. Willow Wilson next week. Who does the art on that? The covers for the series are gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't know who does the interior art.
Art by Cafu.
Cafu,
I'm excited. They were wasted in the New 52. They put them on the Blackhawk series, the very short-lived Blackhawk series. Available digitally in single issues, available and your back issue bid in your local store, or also as a trade on Amazon at your local store. Not available as a digital trade, though. If you're going digital, you got to buy the individual issues.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, who knows why? Anyway, so everybody, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week. In the meantime, have an awesome Tuesday night.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.